I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, comments from you on our blog. Backtalk is next. But first, it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, media executive Nick Charles, and syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. I may jump in once or twice, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, thanks, Michelle. Fellas, hey, what's up? And welcome to the shop. How's everybody doing?
Hey.
Pretty good, Jimmy. Pretty good.
All right, well, you know what? Strangely enough, ICE is back in the news. Now, last year, they landed in hot water after a white employee showed up at a Halloween party hosted by top ICE officials dressed in a striped prison outfit, dreadlocks, and darkened skin makeup. We talked about that a bit. And, Michelle, we got some tape on that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you guys did. You did talk about it. George Kelly, one of our shop regulars, and he was talking about this. Let's play it.
Drop it.
It's not clean hipster fun. It's just a lack of thinking. This is a situation where I don't think there necessarily needs to be black faces at the top. I'll settle for smart white faces. This is a law enforcement agency with more than 15,000 employees, second largest investigative agency in the federal government. There really needs to be some intelligence.
Clean. Oh,
no, there's a lot here, guys. In the 23-page report, it shows in one of the footnotes, for example, that Assistant Secretary of ICE Julie Myers ordered the relocation of the person who was caught in blackface, who, by the way, was an ICE attorney. He wasn't some mid-level flunky. And he was quoted as saying, "I'm a Jamaican inmate from Chrome." And Chrome is known as a notorious immigration facility in Miami, Florida for Haitians, Hondurans, and Latin Americans that's been known for rampant sexual abuse and things like that. And what's really interesting is this is straight out of the Republican playbook, because Secretary Julie Myers is the niece of former Joint Chiefs of Staff Richard Myers and is married to DHS Secretary Michael Chertoff's former Chief of Staff, who is the cousin of Republican Senator Kit Bond. If this is not Republican incest, I don't know what it is.
Wait, hold up. What's the relevance of who she's married to?
This shows the level and the magnitude of cronyism in the Bush administration. She had to be appointed during a recess appointment. Even Republican senators questioned whether she was even qualified to become assistant secretary.
I'm sorry, did she go to the man's house and pick the uniform out for him? I mean, it's bad judgment, but I'm sorry. Well, Somebody else help me out.
We're not even sure if she, like, quote, covered it up. I mean, she ordered the destruction of these pictures that were in this camera. Her defense is, she says, well, because I knew they were offensive. I didn't want them showing up as an agency brochure.
And then
hold on. Some agency brochure by accident. So, you know, that's plausible, implausible, or whatever. But I think that the problem is people are trying to couch this in sort of the fact that she is so young. She is someone who came in with no law enforcement background. This is like, as Arsalan points out, this is like shades of Brownie at FEMA. Yeah. So there's some legitimate criticism of that. My problem is we have to differentiate between the offense, which is a blackface skit that slaps on racial grounds and on immigrant grounds, versus the destruction of the property of these photos. Because if, in fact, she destroyed the photos to cover up, then that's 10 times more important than who showed up in blackface.
Mm-hmm. Yo, Nick, get some of this here.
I think, you know, the first offense is that the person who picked the uniform, if anybody has been to Chrome as I have, it's an orange uniform. It's not a striped uniform. Secondly, the person got an award from Julie Myers. Didn't she not award them a prize? And then she thought better of it and said, oh, you know something, this might be deemed offensive, and therefore I'm going to go back. Now, you can take her at a word and be, you know, in la-la land and say, oh, she did it for the betterment of the organization, and she was thinking, oh, this is offensive. Or you can think, you know something, I screwed up, I should have killed this in the bud, I should have said, let's not take photographs, and now their photographs exist, let's kill them. The fact of the matter is, I don't, you know, the whole lineage that A-Train was running down, I'm not with that. But my problem is that these folks and their Halloween skits, their fraternity skits, their sorority skits, they seem to come back to the same theme. They always seem to be picking on people of color, and it makes no sense. You know, there's so many other ways to do satire and do stuff that's funny without having to come back to the same tired old themes.
All right, well, you know what? Let's keep it moving forward. And you know what? For some odd reason, Absolut Vodka has a PR hangover after their ad featuring a redrawn map of America where Mexico took up a good piece of the United States had to be pulled. I wonder who's buying now. Ruben, the R. Did you dig the ad, bro?
The way the ad looked was it was sort of what the Southwest looked like and what the North America looked like, with Mexico so much more expansive, with the borders of Mexico going all the way up to Oregon and onto Oklahoma. And basically what would happen if Mexico came in and swallowed up the Southwest. So I dug the ad. I didn't dig the way that it played out here or the way that, Absolute Vodka sort of caved into that kind of pressure, ultimately pulling the ad in the 11th hour and apologizing for this offense. This got blown way out of proportion. This is about selling vodka. And, you know, forget the fact that vodka margaritas are not the rage in Mexico and that maybe vodka is not going to be selling
That's
so good
true.
South of the border. I think this became a proxy for what a lot of people feel about the immigration debate. And suddenly this ad, which is a harmless ad that was only meant to be seen south of the border, becomes like, well, I don't know, some sort of signal to all those Mexican-Americans up here in the U.S. to take back the Southwest. So we're sending out code through magazine ads. This just got really nutty.
Can I ask a question? How is this any different from that New Yorker magazine cover that is on countless dorm room walls where, Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, the Bronx, and Staten Island take up like half the United States,
and everything else is
reduced to like, what's the difference?
That ad was great, except it would be more authentic with a Don Julio ad for tequila, which I would have enjoyed a lot more than Absolute Margarita. I'm with you, R, on that. As far as the New Yorker ad, is an old ad from way back in where it was an intellectual thing where all the smart people are in, in New York, and all of a sudden there's a big wide expanse, and then there's the kind of California on the coast. As far as the Absolute, I found nothing wrong with it. You know, it's one of those things where people are so sensitized these days to immigration and the Bronx hordes coming across the borders that they're trying to fence in, that, people just get overworked for no reason.
A-Train, I think the ad was put out there specifically to agitate this kind of conversation. I think they knew what they were doing. What do you think?
I agree with you,
so
Jimmy.
We're suckers.
Conspiracy theorists live.
Well, no, I think, for the Minutemen and the Tancredos of the world, I think that they, utterly gasped when they saw this ad. And I agree that it was blown way out of proportion. But I also think that it does, call into question, the jingoistic nature of many of our debates in American society, obviously the immigration debate, being front and center on that. And so I think it was overblown. And I'm disappointed that Absolute buckled to the pressure.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. And we're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Nick Charles, and Arsalan Iftikhar. Back to you, Jimmy.
All right. Speaking of things that have been overblown now, a supporter of John McCain is in the doghouse for what some think was him comparing Barack Obama to Tiger Woods. Yo, we got tape on that somewhere, don't we, Michelle?
A little editorializing there, Jimmy, but sure, I'll play it so that the other people can have the information and make up their minds
for themselves.
Here, let's hear it so we can all decide.
Rest assured that men like Senator McCain will be the goal and the men that my two young boys will emulate and admire. You can have your Tiger Woods. We've got Senator McCain.
That was Vets for Freedom co-founder David Bellavia at a pro-McCain rally. And I don't know, it may or may not be relevant, but the Masters is starting this week.
I'll bet all the money in my pockets that the guy didn't know that the Masters was starting this weekend.
I'll take that bet and double it that the Masters was top of mind because he's probably a golf fan. And this had nothing to do with any slick, sly references to Barack Obama or anything like that. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
But he also, he could have said, you can have your Tom Brady, you can have your Brett Favre, you can have your Dale Earnhardt Jr. I think it was a deliberate use of Tiger Woods, and I am going to go on the record and say that I am Tiger Woods also. I think that... we challenge rhetoric when, Jeremiah Wright and Senator Barack Obama says something, but why don't we challenge something when the white candidate says something also? I'm sorry, I'm sick and tired of this double standard.
Ruben, help me out here.
Well, listen, I'm not going to go so far as to say that, necessarily apologies to Jimmy that he was thinking about the Masters. I think he was thinking about Barack Obama. But the more I thought about this, the fact that you would compare Barack Obama to Tiger Woods is nothing but a compliment.
Yeah, exactly.
It elevates Barack Obama to a different level, to a higher level. And I think that ultimately it sort of hurts the guy who made the comment infinitely more than it hurts Barack Obama or his supporters. If anything, maybe John McCain wants to pull this guy aside and say, hey, next time, do me a favor. Don't compare my opponent to Tiger Woods.
That's good.
Now, honestly, I'm going to say, I'm not Tiger Woods. Most of us are more like John Daly. And I think the Tiger Woods note was a substitution for Obama. whether it was it meant in mean spirit or not, he screwed it up because he was going to say one of two things when he said ghoul, which sounded like G-H-O-U-L. He was going to say John McCain is either the gold standard or the goal for those of us. And he didn't get that out. And then he didn't get out the Tiger Woods thing efficiently. So I think it was a matter of efficiency and execution. Maybe he had something in there, but he didn't get it out the right way. And therefore, it came out the way it did.
All right. Well, in more McCain news, you know, he has a fan club of his own. I guess somebody did like a takeoff on the Weather Girls, It's Raining Men. And I guess it's
allegedly your screensaver, Jimmy. Why are you trying to act like you aren't
here we
you
go.
Playing
here
information?
We go.
I've never seen this
play
before.
It. We'll play it for the folks who haven't memorized it as Jimmy. Here it is.
We're Yo McCain Girls. And have we got news for you?
You better listen.
Get ready, all you lonely girls.
And leave those Democrats at home.
All right.
Campaign is rising. Obama's getting low. According to our sources, McCain should get some votes. Cause in the 2008 election, the forecast calls for rain.
Yeah.
The first time in history, it's gonna start raining McCain. It's raining McCain. Hallelujah, it's raining McCain.
I thought I was going to have to go.
Ouch.
Thank you so
tell
much
me
for
these
that,
women
Michelle.
Were hot.
Just tell me they were hot.
I
couldn't visualize
thank you so much for
I
that,
I thought
Michelle.
I was going to have to get oxygen for Arsalan.
Jimmy.
Hold on. What was that? Go ahead.
I love that song. I have danced to that song. And Martha Walsh has performed that song in some of my favorite old spots in New York City. I am upset. Because also, you look at the three of the women. I'm not talking about, you know, trying to be any body type or trying to cast aspersions. But come on, the Obama girl wipes them off the planet in terms of just the way she performs. And the three of them, they can't sing, at least be able to sing. If you can't perform, sing.
That's my
Is that what we're calling them, Obama now? The Obama girl's a performer? I love it, Nick.
That's right. She is a performer. She's been elevated to the
top. Girl's got talent.
A-Train. Come on with it.
When I was watching this two-minute video on YouTube, I finally realized what Simon Cowell must have felt like when William Hung was singing She Bangs on the American Idol tryouts. That was 2 minutes that I'm never getting back in my life. And it's been viewed a million times, so that means 2 million minutes have been wasted on this video.
We just wasted four of them.
Go ahead, bring it home. Same thing. Too many people with too much time on their hands on either side of the party. Really doesn't matter whether it's Republicans or Democrats. People are just trying to have fun right now. They must be bored with the race already.
I love it.
Am I
the only one?
Yes. I think
it's hilarious.
Because you
it was painful.
You know, Michelle, it really underlines the importance of the internet in shaping this election and shaping some of the conversations about the election, you know, because, you know, I don't think any of us would have seen anything like this 4 or 5 years ago, you know, and it's interesting that McCain's supporters at this late date are deciding, you know, to get out there and come up with something. They should have came up with a rap or some kind of waltz, you know, like years ago, you know, but you know, I guess
I know.
It's
Where's
too
John
late
Philip Sousa when you need him, right?
Exactly. Right, when you're running for president. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to call it a wrap. Thank you so much for another session of The Barbershop. I have to hand it over to our resident diva.
Thank you.
Michelle Martin.
You all are just jealous because nobody's made a video for y'all.
That's true.
That's what it is. You're hating.
Well, they have, but nothing we can put on YouTube.
Exactly.
Jimmy does not speak for the rest of the barbershop.
Yes, he does.
Video search. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com, and he joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida. Ruben Navarrete, who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com, joined us from KOGO in San Diego. Nick Charles is the vice president of digital content at BET.com, and he joined us from our New York bureau. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney and contributing editor for Islamica magazine, and he joined us here in our Washington studio. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
Hey, thank you.
Yep.